Good evening. Communication. Who here is great at communicating? Are you great at communicating? How do we communicate? All right, didn't think I'd have to do this, but let's get to the basics. Communicating. So there's this thing, in front of your face, it's an opening. There's some sharp objects in it. Also a floppy thing called a tongue. If you push air through it at the right amount, do it properly, you can make these recognizable noises, right, that other people can understand, called words. So that's called communication. So now that you know what communication is, actually, I should say that's a form of communicating. Now that you know how to communicate, let me ask the question again. How do we communicate? Yeah, sadly, some of us are better at moving our mouths than others. All right, I'm going to read the purpose there at the beginning. Actually, communication, overcoming patterns of preconceived conclusions and pushiness. What does preconceived conclusions have to do with communication? All right, the purpose. All of us are taught to talk, read, and write. But are we really taught how to listen in order to understand the one endeavoring to communicate with us? This lesson stresses the importance of developing the habit of listening empathetically when someone shares in order to relate effectively with them. Thoughts to ponder. Do I understand what he is saying? Or am I only listening through my audiobiography? Am I only listening through my glasses? Am I looking at the conversation the way I would? Or am I taking the time to put down my lenses, take up the other person's lenses, and see how they are seeing it? Does he understand that I understand? Or does he understand that I am not really listening? Am I listening to understand his heart? Or just to manipulate him to get my way? So you can see how listening, just by listening, you can actually also manipulate a conversation as well. So these different questions, think about these as we go through the lesson. All right, so a biblical perspective. Seek to understand before reacting. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. So a soft answer turneth away wrath. Never really realized how much this verse is actually saying. So if you jump down to the bottom of the page there, the first question, how does the rule seek to understand before reacting fit in with the thought that a soft answer turneth away wrath? So think about that one for a little bit. So seeking to understand before reacting, how does that fit in with a soft answer turneth away wrath? If we're quick to react after we hear something, we're going to most times end up saying something we don't mean or something hurtful. So by being quick to react, we often end up saying grievous words that in turn stir up anger and stir up something that necessarily wasn't there, but we just had to go ahead and say something before we thought it through. But if we seek instead to understand the other person, if we look at it through their glasses, we can see where they're coming from. We can see how they feel. We often could start a lot of arguments or a lot of problems if we would ask a couple questions. Why are they saying this? So before we answer them, before we respond, why are they saying this? And what do they actually mean? Are we looking at it from their point? All right, Proverbs 18:13. He that answereth a matter before he heareth it it is folly and shame unto him. We shouldn't react or give our opinion till we hear, till we actually hear what they're saying. Proverbs 25, go not forth hastily to strive, lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof, when thy neighbor hath put thee to shame. Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thine infamy turn not away. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. So there, that first part, go not forth hastily to strive, can also be said as go not forth hastily to court. So kind of like going to court before we talk to our neighbor. So if we take our neighbor to court, kind of interesting thing, if we take our neighbor to court, who ends up deciding our verdict a lot of the time? Oftentimes, if it goes far enough, it goes to a jury, right? And so our neighbors, our other neighbors, end up deciding our verdict against our other neighbor. So kind of interesting way to think about it. So we have to be careful to talk to our neighbor before we actually say something we don't actually mean, or do something we don't actually, haven't actually meant to do. And in end, if we know what our neighbor means, if we have or see a problem with our neighbor or have a problem with our neighbor, we go to talk to them first, we can see their side first. And then maybe there's something that we're doing wrong, and we can keep that from basically causing a larger argument or a larger problem. All right, so you can turn the page to question number 3. How am I going to speak to the neighbor who you have the problem with before you tell others about the matter, save you trouble? Any thoughts? Could stop a war, who knows? Oftentimes you say something bad about your neighbor, that often gets back around to them, right? And then they say something about you, and before you know it, there's this huge ordeal, or very bad relationship between you and your neighbor. And if you would have just went to them in the first place, you probably didn't even disagree. Sadly, friendships are ended by a disagreement that in the first place wasn't even a disagreement. Why should we be careful to hear a matter out before we permit our emotions to become involved? Kind of an interesting question. Why should we hear out a matter before we allow our emotions to become involved? So here again, this is kind of going back to that idea of looking at it from our view. We allow our emotions to get involved when we react. If we allow that, we often end up assuming. We start to assume things about the other person. We start to make up things because we're looking at it from our emotions, from our perspective. All right, give attention to correction. Everybody loves that word correction, right? Let the righteous smite me, it shall be a kindness. And let him reprove me, it shall be an excellent oil, which shall not break my head. For yet my prayer also shall be in their calamities. To give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother. So number 5 there, the question, in what ways might a righteous person bringing criticism be a kindness? So who likes to be criticized? You might think, okay, criticism. Someone comes to me and says something that I'm not doing right, I could probably take it. I could probably fix it, right? But when it actually happens, someone comes and tells you something, it's kind of hard to take. For instance, when I was teaching at Schaeferstown, I had the blessing of doing parent-teacher conferences. And the one time I had a parent come in, and he told me that I was pretty much teaching his child the wrong way. And at the time, I did not like it. I didn't, of course, blow up or at him. Maybe I should have talked to him right away. But I didn't appreciate it, and I didn't really accept the criticism. But then later, when I was looking back, I was like, you know what? He actually did have some truth. Maybe he didn't present it in the right way, but there was some truth to it. There was something I could improve. So criticism, even if it's brought in the wrong way, oftentimes does have some truth. Now, of course, if it's brought in hate or someone doesn't like another person, they criticize, then of course sometimes there's not truth to it. What is one sure way to distinguish between a wise man and a foolish man? 6, any thoughts? How they handle criticism, right? How they take rebuke. What's a wise man going to do? He's going to love that person, right? And he's going to take that criticism and he's going to, what? Look at his own life and see how he can actually change his own life. If it is true. How's a foolish man going to handle criticism? Get angry, yeah. Going to start talking bad about that person behind their back. Oh, look, that person came and told me to do this. I mean, who are they to tell me that? So, who are you? You the wise man? You the foolish man? All right, the wisdom of using few words. Proverbs 10, in the multitudes of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. So is it saying we shouldn't talk at all? No, I believe it's saying we have to be careful with how much we say, or again, instead of being swift to speak, be swift to hear, slow to speak. In multitudes of words there wanteth not sin. And a lots of talking, and lots of blabbering, and lots of gossip, there's more potential for sin. So sometimes we just need to talk less, be slower to speak. Proverbs 17 there, 27. He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise, and he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. So, question 7 there. What is a man likely doing, who is being quiet during a debate? So someone that's not talking during debate, what are they? What are they actually doing? Most times they're being wise. Most listening to both sides of the argument. And probably not getting into it because it's probably going to get nowhere. How many times have you been in an argument where... Or how many arguments always end in just one side being correct and one side winning? A lot of arguments end exactly where they started. Nobody really wants to give up any ground. So again, being slow to speak. The beauty of chosen words. A man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good is it? Number 9, in the earlier section, not speaking was emphasized. And here, speaking is held up. What's the difference? Wise speaking, right? Thinking before you speak. Maybe it's listening before you speak. And of course it says there, a word spoken in due season. So it's not always saying the correct thing, but it's saying the correct thing at the right time. So often we kind of don't really think about the right time to say the correct thing. We might know we're right, and you might be right, but it's not always the correct time to say it. There then in Ecclesiastes 12, I'm just going to read the last verse. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. So how might wise words be like goads? So goads were long sticks, basically with a bunch of nails in them, used for prodding cattle. So how can wise words be like a goad? They're probably going to hurt a little bit, right? They're probably going to make you think, make you change direction, or should make you change direction, more or less. But they're not going to injure, right? So again, they're wise words. So if they're wise, they're going to be said at the right time. Again, they're just not just correct words. They're wise words. They're said with care. They're said at the right time. All right, getting on to the for class discussion then. The four forms of communication. Talking, writing, reading, and listening. So these four are different things we use to communicate, right? So if we're talking, are we communicating? Communicating involves both sides, right? To communicate, you need to be talking and also listening. So just talking, not necessarily communicating. So moving on to the second point there, understanding what communication is. Diagnose before prescribing. How would you like if you walked into the doctor's office and he just handed you the pills and said, here you go, this is going to fix your problem, and not even ask you what the problem is? That wouldn't really work, right? So when we're talking, are we diagnosing before prescribing? Seeking first to understand, then be understood. Are we listening when others are speaking? How do we listen properly? So now, moving on to the third point there, levels of listening. So we have the first one, ignoring, not even trying to listen, pretending, acting to listen, basically looking like you're listening, but you're not actually listening. This is one that probably gets us mostly in trouble, right? We act like we're listening, and then later comes around, and oh yeah, I told you. No, you didn't. Yeah, you did. Selective listening, hearing what you want. This one can also get us in trouble as well. Might hear part of it, but we might not hear the important part. Attentive listening. What's attentive listening? Is that what we should be doing? Attentive listening, that sounds right, right? I mean, you're hearing what they're saying and you're understanding what they're saying and you can reply to what they're saying, right? But, turn the page then, we get empathetic listening. What's the difference between empathetic listening and attentive listening? Any thoughts? What's the difference between empathetic? Yeah, sorry, go ahead. It's truly listening to the person, right? Again, it's looking at it from their point of view as well. Putting yourself in their shoes. So we go into conversations with these preconceived ideas, right? With our own story, with our own biography. We have to be careful that that doesn't affect and help, or doesn't make us maybe change a conversation to how we want it to be, or maybe responding before we actually know what the person means. All right, elements of self-centered listening. So now we're going to have a look at two different elements of self-centered listening, elements of empathetic listening. So elements of self-centered listening, the normal way to listen, evaluating. First one, do I agree with you or do I disagree? Are you correct or incorrect? Probe, asking questions to steer you to my point of view. I almost think that might be kind of tough, but we probably do it without thinking about it. Interpret. Since I face something similar, I know what is going on. I know how you feel because I face that same thing. So I know exactly what you're going through, right? I know how you feel. But every situation is different, right? Nothing, no situation is the same. Advice. I went through that too, now listen to me. I know exactly what you're going through, and I know exactly what you should be doing, and this is how you should do it. But again, every situation is different. What you did, or what you think they should do, might not be the right thing. So are we truly listening? Are we truly empathetically listening before we respond? Elements of empathetic listening then, the desirable way to listen. Mimic content, rephrasing content, reflecting the feeling, or feeling how they feel. Or are we just letting our own feelings get in the way? Responding to the feedback, is it emotional? Is it time to listen? Is it logical? There's different types of conversations, right? And here I think is where it comes into our more or less steering the conversation where we want it to go. Sometimes someone starts a conversation, maybe it's an emotional thing for them. Maybe it's something that's really tough for them right now. And we steer it in a way that, oh, we're going to make this more of a logical argument or logical conversation. Sincerely desire to understand and make sure they feel you want to understand. So, this again kind of ties in that feeling what they're feeling. If we feel what they feel, then they can actually know that we understand them. We are actually communicating with them. All right, the advantages of empathetic listening. It saves in the long run. How can empathetic listening save in the long run? If we truly listen to what they're saying the first time, right, we don't end up going on this big, long cycle of saying things that never even had to be said. Or in the end, they have to come back and say it again to you, right? Just because you didn't actually hear what they were saying the first time. It is within our circle of influence. We have an impact. It is a tremendous deposit. So kind of going back to that other lesson we had before. Now the last point there, the remaining aspects of communication. So here, this is kind of interesting. 10% of communication is the words we say. 30% is the tone we make. 60% is our body language, what we give away about our feelings. So you can kind of say the same words, but mean totally different things, right? Come home from work and you say, I had a good day at work. Oh, I had a good day at work. I had a good day at work. mean totally different things, right? So we have to be careful with how, when we communicate to someone, are we empathetically listening to them? Are we understanding their tone, their body language? Now, the order of communication from Greek philosophy. There are several things a person will know, have to know before he will open up to us and accept what we have to say. He will have to know we are trustworthy, or ethos, that we really care, or pathos, and finally, it will have to make sense to him, or logos, so logical. Too often we try to convince with logic alone, and that is rarely as persuasive as we might think. So ethos, the moral elements that determines a character's action and behavior, in other words, what the person senses we actually are. Pathos, the quality or power in life of evoking a feeling of pity or compassion. In other words, what the person senses we actually feel. Or logos, the rational or logical element. In other words, the logic we use in reaching the conclusion we are endeavoring to communicate. So when we're communicating, are we remembering these three things? So when you're listening, it's the same way. So when we're communicating, are we communicating in a way that makes us trustworthy? Do we really care when we're communicating? Do we really care? Or are we just logical and that's it? But also, are we logical? All right, now applying the lesson. So there it says, the first one, give examples. Two kings who made rules before they had really thought them through. I have one here that think about Daniel and King Darius, right? So people come running back to King Darius, and he's like, they're saying about how Daniel was praying. He probably didn't really think about it too much. He was just supposed to speak. Oh, yeah, everybody got to bow down to me. Everybody can't basically pray to another god. Swift to speak. All right, now if we jump over to number 4 there, page 49, jump over to number 4. An example. You really weren't paying attention at the red light because you were trying to tie your shoe. Alas, your foot eases off the brake and you drift forward and dent the bumper of the car in front of you. Uh-oh, here comes the car's driver, and is he ever cross? But quickly you notice his car is an old one and has several other dents too. What is going to be your response? Maybe I should have two people come up here and act it out, right? What do you think your response would be? Oh, well... You got other dents that just added to your car, right? Makes your car look better, probably. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's amazing how much not speaking can get you pretty far in those situations. All right, any thoughts on this communicating before we jump on to cooperation?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could spend a lot of time just on communication. Communication has a lot of different aspects to it. I'm here kind of focusing on some of the empathetic listening, more or less. But of course, there's a lot, also a lot of on the other side as well, talking. How can we best communicate when we're talking? So a question I have, how is communicating involved in our personal life management? How does it help our personal life? Something to think about. All right, cooperation. You can jump on to lesson 10, cooperation. So now cooperation kind of, overcoming patterns of individualism and self-isolation. So it's personal life management, right? How does cooperating, working with others, improve our personal life? So the purpose there, this lesson is the culmination of consideration and communication. As you have entered into the other person's world and have conveyed to him that you really understand where he is coming from, then the two or more of you can turn and attack the problem together. As long as he feels you are a part of the problem, and vice versa, you will expend your energies against each other. But when two different personalities pull together, the force generated far surpasses what either could have done alone. This lesson teaches the importance of pulling together and how it can be done. So, working together. So if one horse is pulling by itself, it can pull a draft horse. If it's pulling by itself, it can pull around 8,000 pounds. So you take two draft horses. They can each pull 8,000 pounds. You put them together. Together, they can pull 24,000 pounds. That doesn't quite add up, right? It's more. Now, those two draft horses put together, they're pulling. They can pull 24,000 pounds. If you put them together again and again and train them, they can pull up to 32,000 pounds. So how can that apply to us in the church? If we work together, right? Might not be the best at first, but still, working together is going to get it farther than working by ourselves. We work together, and we keep working together, work on our relationships, listen to each other. Then we can start pulling way more than we could even pull by just our selves separately. All right, thoughts to ponder. Have I grown beyond the stages of dependence and independence to interdependence? Do I know what is to synergize my energy and talents with the team for greater productivity and fulfillment? Can I enjoy the contribution and success of my teammate? Oh, that can be kind of tough sometimes, right? Someone else getting the glory. Are we right with there? Are we right with them? Are we giving them, are we lifting them up as well? That can be kind of tough. All right, a biblical perspective. So we have two different definitions there, individualism and self-isolation. Individualism, the pursuit of individual rather than common or collective interest. Self-isolation, pulling away from others, not being real with them. So ask yourself, am I doing this? Do I really have the common collective interest, you could say, of the church? Or even if you're part of a business, part of a team. Pulling away from others, not being real with them. Am I doing that? Romans 14, him that is weak in faith receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. For one believeth that he may eat all things, another who is weak eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not, and let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. So, question number one, how can there be any value to the church in taking into the membership a weaker member? So at first it's like, whoa, weaker member. But you think about it, it says weaker member. Right, with training, just like those horses, with training, even a weaker member can help out a lot. And of course, together, through growing, again, listening, helping each other, working together, you can all grow stronger. You can get to that pulling 32,000 pounds. And of course, in the church, you can't put a limit on it. You can just keep getting better. What is meant by the phrase, none of us liveth to himself? What do you think? Everybody has all the answers filled in, right? So you can just read them off. What is meant by the phrase, none of us liveth to himself?
There's a connection with other people, whether you realize it.
And if you look at that, none of us liveth to himself, kind of makes you think about it a little bit. If you ask yourself that, am I living to myself? Hopefully none of us are. No man is an island. We all interact with each other. We all have relationships. So in this working together, we all have to listen. We all have to communicate. So, of course, that's why it's a kind of a culmination, that communicating consideration is a culmination of cooperation. All right, 1 Corinthians 12:12, for as the body is one and hath many members, all the members of that one body being many are one body. So also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear shall say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if they all were one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet but one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor, again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. So you think about it, of the body, there's different parts you would think, I'd rather have this or rather not have that. I mean, you'd rather have everything, of course. If you could choose, you'd probably choose one or the other, right? There's different parts that you would say is more feeble or less. But, of course, every part is very important. So there, number three, question number three. What problem is described by the foot and the ear in their proposed conversation? So the foot and the ear, their proposed conversation. Because I'm not the hand, I'm not of the body. Or the ear saying, because I'm not the eye, I'm not of the body. What's the problem? Exactly. Just because I can't, or because I can't do what someone else can do, or because I can't do a certain part very well, therefore I'm not of the body. we can't do a certain part in the church, doesn't mean that we're not part of the church. What problem is described by the eye's conversation with the hand? So now this is jumping down a little bit. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee. So what's the problem described there? It's again, individualism, right? Saying, oh, well, I don't need that person. I don't need that person. Every part is very important. For the body to function, you have so many different parts, right? You have the heart, you have the lungs. They do two different things, right? They can't do each other's jobs. But yet, you can't take the one and not the other one. So, everybody is very important. We're going to get onto some variations or different strengths we have. All right, let's jump down to for class discussion. Bottom of the page there. The goal of cooperation is synergism. So what's synergism? Synergism, when two things work together and yield up their identity, they produce more than if they added together what both could do alone. So kind of like the example of the two horses. By themselves, they can each pull 8,000 pounds, right? You'd think, put them together, 16,000 pounds. No, put them together, 24,000 pounds. Again, if they work together very well, figure it out, they could pull even more. So illustrations they have there, pieces of burning wood glued together into a beam. You have one piece of wood, you put a couple pieces of wood to glue together, they can hold a lot more than just if you would add each of those individually. Elements of cooperation. So now different parts of cooperation. So in cooperation, you can think cooperation in the church. The humility to accept another's strengths. So, someone's better than you at something. Are we accepting that? And are we lifting them up? Are we commenting on that? Are we not being jealous of that? Do we have the humility to go up to them and say, hey, great job? Or are we like, oh man, I could have did a better job than that? The courage and trust to contribute your own. Stepping up and doing what we're good at. If we step up, then we will in turn probably encourage and help others to step up as well. So we all step up, right? Everybody else steps up. Step up again. Keep doing more and more. Using our strengths to the greatest of our ability. Imagine how strong of a church we could have. Turning the page there. An appreciation for diversity. So again, appreciating our differences. Accepting someone that is different. And then lastly, a determination to avoid domination. So how do we avoid domination? Again, no one's better than everyone else, right? We're all needed in the body. We're all needed in the church. So to avoid domination, we kind of need to do those first three things, right? Have humility to accept other strengths, courage and trust to contribute our strength, and then we appreciate diversity. I think if we do those things, we shouldn't have a problem with domination. All right, maintaining cooperation in adversarial relationships or opposing conflicting relationships that can be a problem. So seek first to understand. So again, kind of going with communicating. Seek first to understand, then be understood. That's a very important part as well. Make sure you're understood. And then we have another important part, the second one there. Verbalize to your opponent that you understand his objectives to be. This is one that's often kind of missed as well. We might understand where they're coming from, but are we telling them what we think they mean? Do they know what I think they mean? Value the differences reflected in your personalities. So again, everybody has different personalities, and some of us can vary with another person a lot more. So are we valuing that? Then offer flexibility. Look for a win-win solution. How can we find a win-win solution? We're going to need to give up something, right? Offer flexibility. It's not just all as the other person. Commit yourself to the team. If you're committed, are you going to allow a conflicting relationship to get involved with the goal of the team? Or are you going to work out that relationship? The rewards of cooperation. Meaning in life. Imagine how life would be if everybody would be their own church. You have nobody else to go to church with. How far would you get? How meaningful would it be? New dimensions in relationships. Cooperation, new dimensions in relationships. If we actually work for those relationships. Again, communication, cooperation. It's going to take work. Oftentimes we think of communicating as just talking, listening, talking. But it takes a lot of work. It takes some work to communicate. We have to put ourselves in their shoes. We have to feel what they're feeling. Greater potentials realized. Together, much more can be accomplished. Again, same with those horses. Imagine us all having great relationships. Now, those relationships, what's it going to involve? It's going to involve wise words, right? Those wise words can hurt sometimes, right? They're kind of like those goads or those nails. They might hurt a little bit. But in turn, are we accepting that criticism and applying it to our life? Changing our life so that, again, we can work to pulling that 32,000 pounds. All right, any thoughts on this cooperation or even communication as well before I wrap it up? All right, so what can we learn about communicating? Swift to hear, slow to speak. Are we truly listening so that we can speak wisely? Speak the correct words at the correct time. Are we cooperating? Do we have cooperation? Are we working together? Or are we fighting against each other? Are you pulling the opposite way? And again, by cooperation, we pull more together. All right. Thank you.